Next step number 607, January 23rd, 2020. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., his holiday, we commemorated, we read, we studied, we prayed, and we met one of his friends, the Reverend Dr. James Lawson. I'm here to tell you about that. This is Father Vosgen. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots and looking at life through the most ancient of all Christian fabrics, Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Vosgen. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vosgen brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armedoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Her name was Liza Hamilton. Do you have a Liza Hamilton in your life? Listen to this. It is well known that Liza Hamilton and the Lord God held similar convictions on nearly every subject. Oh, I love that. It is out of John Steinbeck's East of Eden. I've read some Steinbeck when I was very young, in high school, I think it was, of Mice and Men. Never realized, wow, I guess it's so short of a story that you really don't get the impact of this writer. But I'm reading East of Eden right now, and this line just hit me this morning. It is well known that Liza Hamilton and the Lord God held similar convictions on nearly every subject. Wow, don't we have a lot of Liza Hamiltons in our lives? Yeah, it's interesting because you run into them all the time. Sometimes they take up your life and you realize, wow, pretty cool. Somebody who knows the will of God, knows what God's thinking. Well, welcome. Welcome to the next step. We're not going to be talking too much about that, but maybe so. We're going to talk a little bit about Martin Luther King Jr. I had a chance to meet with the Reverend Lawson. Dr. James Lawson Jr., who was a proponent, a teacher of nonviolence, and walked with Dr. King, 92 years old right now. And we had a chance to meet him on the holiday just a few days ago. I'm going to share some stories about that and some of the insight that I gained from that. It was fascinating. And also lead into, hopefully, we're going to talk a little bit about expectations, people's expectations of you, what you are. And if we don't get to it, I promise we'll get to it next week. It's been fascinating. A lot of stuff has been happening. Of course, we're coming off of a big, big weekend. It was the Martin Luther King Jr. weekend here in America. And we have a chance to take a pause and think about this great man who, you know, if you've been listening to Next Step, you know he's one of the cornerstones of Next Step. It's part of Armedoxy. In fact, unbeknownst to us, that Dr. King in the 1960s took right out of the playbook from St. Bartholomew Magonia. What? Why? What did you say? Yes, that's right. That's right. I'm going to share with you something that we read the other night. You know, every year since 2004, we have a Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. This weekend, organized by In His Shoes. We've done retreats. We've done conferences. We've had days of gospel with the gospel singers. I mean, some incredible, incredible activities. We've organized MLK hikes where we've gone to the mountaintop and spoken and shared. And of course, in all of this, it's to bring the gospel message to some relevance in our lives. Because first and foremost, Dr. King always identified himself as a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And in that context, we used some of his writings this past week at our Bible study. interspersed also with people like Hrant Dink. It was his anniversary of his assassination just a week ago. And also there is, to me, a very special person in our Armenian church history, Magridich Kharimyan Hayrik, who talked about self-determination. And if you think about what Dr. King did, if you think about what Dink was writing about, you think about what Kharimyan Hayrik did back in the 19th century, and you know, it all comes together. And it comes together where? Around a gospel message given to us by Jesus Christ. So last Monday night at the commemoration, we had a Vesper service. And during our Bible study, we read something right out of Dr. King's last Christmas sermon. And I will definitely have a link on today's show notes to it so you could follow along or do some even more in-depth studying on your own. But listen to this, okay? It says, "It's one of the strangest things that all of the great military geniuses of the world have talked about peace. The conquerors of old who came killing in pursuit of peace. Alexander, Julius Caesar, Charlemagne, and Napoleon were akin to seeking a peaceful world order. If you will read Mein Kampf closely enough, you will discover that Hitler contended that everything he did in Germany was for peace. And the leaders of the world today talk eloquently about peace. Every time we drop a bomb in North Vietnam, President Johnson talks eloquently about peace. What is the problem? They are talking about peace as a distant goal, as an end we seek, but one day we must come to see that peace is not merely a distant goal we seek, but it is a means by which we arrive at the goal. We must pursue peaceful ends through peaceful means." Does that sound familiar? How we've been talking, how many times have you heard me talk about you don't fight fire with fire, you fight it with, you know, with water. And we need to start changing that metaphor. And this particular piece just spoke to me. And you're going to see why exactly, how it fits in, why I had the audacity. And that's one of his favorite words. Why I had the audacity to say that it's right out of the playbook of St. Vartan Mamigonian. And of course, that's 5th century, 451 against the Persians. Dr. King continues in here. He talks about some of the traits. He says, "Now let me say that the next thing we must be concerned about, if we are to have peace on earth and goodwill toward men, is the nonviolent affirmation of the sacredness of all human life. Every man is somebody because he is a child of God. And so when we say, 'Thou shalt not kill,' we're really saying that human life is too sacred to be taken on the battlefields of the world." And he continues, and I invite you to read the entire thing or listen to it. I don't know what link. We might even have the feed so you can listen to it. Check out the show notes. But he goes on to talk about love, about eros, about philos, and then he talks about agape love. And he talks about the need for us to love as God loved. And I'm going to just get down to the bottom line. Actually, no, I'm not going to get to the bottom line. I'm going to read you what he writes, because he writes very eloquently. "Then the Greek language has another word for love, and that is the word agape. Agape is more than romantic love. It is more than friendship. Agape is understanding, creative, redemptive, goodwill toward all men. Agape is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return." Seeks nothing in return. Think about it. Is it possible to think about this? Do we have examples? Well, probably the most closest one to this would be parenthood, right? motherhood, fatherhood, you do good for your child. Your parents have done good for you with very little in return. And of course, the ultimate example comes to us from God, who gives us all the graces, who gives us all the beauty of the world. And what is the expectation in return? So he continues over here. When you rise to love on this level, you love all men, not because you like them, not because their ways appeal to you, but you love them because God loves them. This is what Jesus meant when he said, love your enemies. And I'm happy that he didn't say, like your enemies. Because there are some people that I find it pretty hard and difficult to like. Liking is an affectionate emotion. And I cannot like anybody who would bomb my home. I cannot like anybody who would exploit me. I can't like anybody who would trample over me with injustices. I can't like them. I can't like anybody who threatens to kill me day in and day out. But Jesus reminds us that love is greater than like. Love is understanding, creative, redemptive, goodwill toward all men. And I think this is where we all, as a people, in our struggle for racial justice, this is where we are as people in our struggle for racial justice. We can't ever give up, and we must work passionately and unrelentingly for first-class citizenship. We must never let up in our determination to remove every vestige of segregation and discrimination from our nation, but we shall not in the process relinquish our privilege to love. And then he gets down to it. He says, I've seen too much hate to want to hate. I've seen hate on the faces of too many sheriffs, too many white citizens, conciliars, and too many Klansmen of the South to want to hate myself. And every time I see it, I say to myself, hate is too great a burden to bear. Somehow we must be able to stand up before our most bitter opponents and say, we will match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we will still love you. We cannot in all good conscience obey your unjust laws and abide by the unjust system, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as a cooperation with good. And so throw us in jail and we will still love you. Bomb our homes and threaten our children, and as difficult as it is, we will still love you. Send your hooded perpetrators of violence into our communities at the midnight hour and drag us out on some wayside road and leave us half dead as you beat us, and we will still love you. Send your propaganda agents around the country and make it appear that we are not fit culturally and otherwise for integration, and we'll still love you. But be assured that we'll wear you out by our capacity to suffer. And one day we will win our freedom. We will not only win freedom for ourselves, we will so appeal to your heart and conscience that we will win you in the process, and our victory will be a double victory. Wow! Wow! Okay, where have you heard that before? Well, if you're Next Step listener, or if you've read some of the history of the Armenian Church, you know that's right out of the playbook of St. Vartan Mamigonian. Yeah, St. Vartan Mamigonian and St. Raymond Thiéret, they authored a letter very similar. Like, go ahead, try it. Go ahead and try it. We have the capacity to overcome you, to win you. Yes, but not by beating you up, not by killing you, but by having God, having love, right? We will match your capacity to inflict suffering on our capacity to endure suffering. There it is. It's right there. It's very clean and clearly spelled out. You overcome violence, not with more violence. Doesn't make sense. You attain peace not by bringing on more violence, but you attain peace by being peaceful yourself. By understanding that you can overcome evil with goodness. And this is a fascinating journey that I've been on, because I see that here in the 21st century, we're developing this idea of Armodoxy based on all of the teachings of the past. And it's coming together not just by the people who are around right now within Armenian Orthodoxy, but we're seeing it from the outside, the strength of this message. And I got to tell you, I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling very good, not because we're filling up stadiums with people believing this, but I'm understanding that as few as people that do get it, I realize that we're not wrong. It's logical. It makes sense. It's not pie in the sky. It's real. Do you want peace in the world? Well, you be peaceful. You start off by taking those steps of peace. And so we read this. This was part of our Bible study on Monday night. Tuesday morning, I attended a gathering called the Interfaith. Well, the gathering was organized by the Interfaith Solidarity Network. I do believe they're in the Los Angeles area. Well, we did meet at one of the churches, at a United Methodist Church in Tarzana, and I went at the invitation of our primate. And there we had an opportunity to listen to the Reverend Dr. James Lawson Jr., who was the featured speaker that morning. And Dr. Lawson, first of all, was somebody who knew Dr. King. Not only knew him, but walked with him. Dr. Lawson is an American activist, university professor, leading tactician in nonviolence with the civil rights movement. Now, I'm going to say that parenthetically, because he did talk a little bit about the civil rights movement a little bit. When I say that, I'm intentionally saying that, because he said that he shouldn't be talking about Dr. King as a civil rights leader. He said he was a theologian. He was somebody who studied the gospel, who studied in seminary. He came out as a theologian. Everything he did was talking about the gospel. This was refreshing to me. I mean, have you heard me say these things? Okay, and all of a sudden, I'm getting like somebody, 91-year-old Dr. Lawson, somebody who is saying that he was spiritually, mystically tied, aligned with Dr. King. He had studied Gandhi and he was teaching, and then he heard about the movement and he said that it's not about a civil rights movement. He said a few things that I want to just throw out at you right now. I'll put links on today's show notes to Dr. Lawson, and it's still fresh in my mind. I'm excited because, like I said, it's just coming out of the Armodoxy playbook, isn't it? Those of you who have been listening know that this is nothing new for us. And it was just very exciting for me to have somebody say, yeah, it's okay. It's right. First of all, here's a few of the things that he said. He said, first of all, let me speak about Jesus' teachings. I'm going to not call him the Christ, because when we talk about Jesus as the Christ, it diminishes from his teaching. Now, you know that I've always referred to Jesus as the Christ. He is the Christ. He is God made manifest, God taking form. But I also understand what Dr. Lawson is saying. Sometimes we get so consumed by the person of Christ that we forget about the message of Christ. And this is most evident in the creed that we recite. In every major denomination, we recite the Nicene Creed. And listen to the creed. We believe in the Father, the Creator. We believe in the Son, Jesus Christ, light of light, God of God, true God of true God, very God, who came, he suffered, and he rose on the third day. In all that we say during the creed, we never once mention, and we believe in the message that he brought. We don't say that, do we? I mean, there's no mention about the message of Christ, which is basically, to me, the selling point. Instead, we've made the selling point, you know, the virgin birth, we've made the resurrection, all important about the person. And definitely, I'm not distracting from that. But equally as important has to be the message of Christ. And I think this is what Dr. Lawson was talking about. It's like, okay, I'm in a room with all kinds of people, and I don't want to be distracted by people arguing over, is he the Christ or not? Because my 1 hour with you this morning is going to be about this message of nonviolence. And that came across very, very loud and clear, at least to me. And like I said, to me, I'm just like listening to this, and I'm just growing more and more excited that somebody's all of a sudden putting a stamp on it and saying, yeah, what you've been talking about, what you've been believing is correct. You're in line with us. And it's not like I got to this point on my own. I mean, I've studied Dr. King, but it was just refreshing in the 21st century to hear somebody talk about this. So many times we talk about all of this is something from the past, and it's not. It's necessary today. So, as I said a few minutes ago, you know, this whole idea of what Dr. King said, it parallels what Vartanans was saying. But think about it in this respect, too, because Dr. Lawson was talking about nonviolence and changing and the metaphors. But think about what happened in Armenia and the practice of nonviolence in the Velvet Revolution, which was just a year ago, right? And here you have an example that can be an example for the rest of the world. But unfortunately, we come back to these models of violence. And so this was his second point that he said. This is wild. This is really going to get you now, okay? You know what he had the audacity to say? He says, we need to start changing the stories inside of religion. Religion must write out of their traditions, of their writings, the stories of hatred, these stories of violence. And I'm going, wow. Now, I'm in a room with all kinds of people. There was some imams there from the Muslim, who were Muslims from the Islamic faith. There were some rabbis there from the Judaic traditions. And I think there was some I don't think there was Orthodox, but definitely Reform and moderate rabbis. And they're all listening, and he's saying, you need to wipe out these stories. Do you remember my dialogue with you about the story of Cain and Abel, about my story to you, my argument against Noah's Ark? Aside from it landing on Ararat, it's like, whoa, what are we talking about? You know, that, you know, he wipes out the entire world in a flood. This is the loving and caring God. Or what about the story of Cain and Abel? What, God didn't like the vegetables that were given to him? So he went after this guy instead of the one who gave the meat. I mean, think about at the very basic level, when you read it literally, this is what happens. And think about the wars. Think about the genocides that take place inside of these traditions. So here's Dr. Lawson advocating for a change. And what it is, it's a paradigm shift. And this is what Dr. King was talking about. We need to change. And this is the born-again moment, not only for individuals, a born-again moment for all of society. And there I was listening to this, taking it all in as an Armenian priest, and realizing that what we've been talking about, what we've been developing as Armodoxy, maybe the time has come, and maybe all these factors are pulling in. I reflected back, and this is one of the most beautiful things about the next step. It is a next step for the last 12 years. We're taking next steps, so we're walking in those steps. It's actually new steps. And if you look back on the next steps that we were taking in 2015, 100 years after the genocide, we were talking about these paradigm shifts in a very incredible project called the 100-Year Journey that we did with artist Gregory Baylarian. You're talking about these paradigm shifts in what we did with artist Gor Mkhitaryan. You're looking at these paradigm shifts at what we're doing in his shoes. Yeah, as Armenians. And so to me, I'm thinking about this and I'm saying we're at a point right now where the time has come. The time has come for us to get the Armodoxy statement out there to the world, because it isn't just our story. And you want one more proof of it? What does Dr. Lawson, how does he end his story? He says, I need you to stop talking about Dr. King as this leader of the civil rights movement. He was a minister of the gospel. He was a theologian. That was his background. That's where he came from. And he said, if you're going to talk about the movement from now on, refer to it as the nonviolent or the black church movement, the black freedom movement. It's not about civil rights. The black church movement. These were his words. And so I'm looking forward to really kind of jumping in there and reading some more about what Dr. Lewis said. It was an exciting morning. It's still fresh in my mind. And so I'm not really processed, but you know, you're next steppers. You get to hear it for the first time. And hopefully we can kind of like put our hands in there and knead the dough a little bit and see what it has to say to all of us. Let's leave it right there. Okay. Give you a lot to think about. I'll have links on our show notes to Dr. Lawson, and I'll be writing some stuff hopefully over this weekend that I'd love to share with you next week. So let's leave it right there, because the next portion of it, they all connect, don't they? The dots all connect. But for right now, let's take a break. We do every week. We play a song of the day, something to give us a moment to just catch our breath with all the excitement that's been happening, something for us to calm down our nerves, something for us to reflect with.
Dismayed, whatever betides. Oh, God will take care of you. He'll take care of you beneath his wings. Hear the wings of love, of love, of love, of love abide. Oh, God will, he will, he will, he will take care. If you let him, he'll take care of you. Yeah. God will take care. Yes, he will. Oh, through every day. If you love the Lord, he'll go all the way. He will take care of you.
Gospel artist Shirley Caesar doing God Will Take Care of You. For sure. That's the guarantee you have. And that's something that we talk about and we sing about. I love gospel music because of the message. We've been talking about the message this morning. The message comes through loud and clear. Hope you enjoyed it. I will have a link on today's show notes. Do check out Shirley Caesar. Do check out all of her wonderful music. And I hope it uplifted you as we get ready for the next portion of The Next Step. distractions. We have too many of them, don't we? Too many things that distract us. We talked a little bit about it during the first portion of today's show when I recounted about this gentleman, Dr. Lawson, who spoke about Christ's message and something that's very important, that we listen to the message of Christ and not be distracted, which we can be a lot of times. We can be by the person of Christ. And it's very, very important for us as Christians that we understand that we follow someone who we believe is God incarnate, and therefore what he has to say to us, and therefore the message that he brings to us is divine. And so should be up there. It should be consuming all of our attention. Unfortunately, we get distracted by too many things. It's like one of the problems of the bells and whistles that we have in so much of Orthodoxy, and this is true not only in the Armenian Orthodox Church and all of the, I think, the ethnic Orthodox, whether, for lack of a better word, in like the Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, the Copts, the Assyrians. You get into issues of nationalism. You get into issues of ethnic identity. And all of a sudden you get distracted. And so all of what originally started off as being the compliment, okay, I'm Armenian Orthodox, and this is a way of expression of something beautiful. We now become the something beautiful has to serve the way of our expression, and the ways and means get confused, just like the ways and means get confused when we talk about peace in this world. And so what are the means by which we bring about peace in this world? If you're gonna appeal to violence, to hatred, to bring about peace, the end does not justify the means. You cannot say that in the dialogue about peace, in the dialogue about love. You can't bring about love by hating people, by preaching hatred, by preaching violence and war. But somehow, and I think you all know what the somehow is, somehow we've lost track of this. And so all of a sudden we start talking about peace vis-a-vis violence. We talk about loving even though there is hatred, and we're not getting to the core problem, to the core issues, that as human beings we're on this planet, and our only salvation is for us to extend our arms to one another, right? And we go back to the prophet, to Martin Luther King himself. Prophetically, he said, we must learn to live together as brothers, or perish together as fools. Prophetically said, right? What's our only hope of salvation is to extending ourselves to one another, to understand that we are brothers and sisters on this planet. But it's that Carl Sagan moment, right? From outer space when they're looking out at the Earth. I forgot which device, I think it was the Voyager, who sent back this picture of Earth. And you're looking at it, I think it's on the edge of the solar system. When the Voyager got to the edge of the solar system, what was it, about 10, 15, 20 years ago? And it's taking a picture back at the solar system. And you're looking at just the billions of stars in the sky, and you're looking at our solar system, and there's an arrow in that picture pointing to Earth. This is this tiny, tiny little blue dot. And all of our history, everything that we know, everything that we have ever known, anything that we will know, is on that one little dot. Every person that we know, every person we will know, is on that one little dot. That's it. And it's a moment of awakening that all we have is one another. And we've got to get with the program. You bring about peace by promoting peace, by using peace as the vehicle. But what prevents us from that? And that's the second portion of today's show. I want to talk about the distractions. The distractions are many. And I came to this because we are going through an incredible moment in history here in the United States. They've just impeached the president, President Trump, and now that impeachment has gone to the Senate for trial. And we're living through this. This is the third impeachment in the history of the United States. Of course, Andrew Johnson, which we all as kids learned about, that the only impeachment was Andrew Johnson. Then in the late 20th century, just in the last decade, President Bill Clinton, he was impeached. And now it's Donald Trump. And there's all kinds of arguments this way, that way. And we're watching it. We're watching it unfold. But do you remember just a week ago, there was almost the threat of war between the United States and Iran? What happened to that discussion? What happened to that story? It's all been forgotten, right? And we go through these periods of distractions, things that take us away from what is going on and what is meaningful. But I don't want to talk about the impeachment in those terms because I do believe that it is meaningful. We have these checks and balances that are in our Constitution, and thank God we have them, and you need to use them. You need to implement them. But the real distractions are the ones that somehow have creeped into our existence. And this is along the same lines as why we talk about peace via violence, why we talk about loving while we are able to hate one another. Well, that hatred, that violence is nothing but the distraction. And that distraction is real. It comes to us. And we have an opportunity to, you know, either filter out that distraction or to be distracted, truly. And lose sight of what the goal is. Case in point, what are the distractions around us? I think comedy these days. Comedies used to be something that would bring laughter. There would be satirical comedy, which is great. It makes you realize. But we're not going beyond the laughter track. And you listen to news, whether you get it on the internet, whether you watch it on television, you're old school, you get it on with printed media, there is always some distraction. In printed media, it used to be the comics. I don't know even if the comics are still around. On television, you have the changer and you change the channels. On social media, they're just blasting you with the comics and there's people who are making jokes and everything. Well, what is the purpose of those jokes? Is it to distract us? I'm always just amused by the laughter track, especially during tragedies. I'm amused by the way they give us the news. I've told you, like on social media, I think it's bizarre. Something like a Facebook or Instagram or even Twitter. Imagine the president of the United States hit a record. That was yesterday, they said it. He hit a record for presidential tweets. Wow. He's the only one who's been tweeting, right? The other presidents, they had a POTUS account, but there wasn't tweeting like this, not where you set policy by Twitter, you know? But it is the reality, isn't it? That's how we're living today. I mean, you know, and it forces us. It forces us to be articulate. Not that he is, not that he even tries, right? But you now have to bring down your statement to 280 characters, which is great because a couple of years ago it was half of that, 140 characters. That was a tweet, right? You have 280 characters to express yourself. That's great, as opposed to this podcast, which is like almost an hour of this priest just rambling on. Can you imagine if we just tweeted this? Well, how do you tweet some of these concepts? But this is what we want. This is what we want. We want it fast and quick and just give it to us. And that's how our news is, because we put in those distractions. Think about it. The examples are all around us. There's a child who's being abused, and they find the parents. And then in the next breath, they tell you the scores of the latest basketball game. Think about it. You hear about these active shooters that are going around in some city. I think it was Florida, in one of the cities in Florida last week. That's how bad it is. It's become so common that I refer to it as one of the cities in Florida, instead of being such an outlandish thing that you know exactly the details. And they tell you about it, and then the next breath they tell you, oh, the Grammy Awards are coming up. And by the way, the Grammy Awards are tainted because they're finding some background on the CEO and so on and so on and so on, okay? I mean, they're not at the same level, and I've been a very big critic of that, right? I've told you that on all social media, it's ridiculous to think that kids dying in Syria, being bombed, the innocent being bombed in Aleppo, is equally as important as the picture of you and your grandchild going fishing. That's fantastic, but they're not the same. They don't carry the same weight. But we're living in a world where they do, because it's just one more image that we're seeing on somebody's page. It's one more image that is being tweeted out there. And you have the choice, you have the option to choose and pick which one you want. And these are the distractions that we have, the distractions. And we're coming up against the Grammy Awards. We've got the Super Bowl coming up, and we've got the Academy Awards. And will the Golden Globes match the Academy Awards? And at some point you need to say, wait a minute, wait a minute. Where's the discussion about life, about what's going on in our world? Just like right now. It's been a week. Nobody's talking about what happened in Iran. We're distracted. We're distracted. What happened in Iran? Right? We killed one of the generals. The United States killed one of the generals. They retaliated by hitting some American targets in Iraq. The Americans said, okay, you didn't kill anybody. We're going to have sanctions against you. And innocent Ukrainian, was it Ukrainian? A jetliner, I believe it was a Ukrainian jetliner, was shot down in Iran. They're bringing over the black boxes, the recorders, find out what, there's an investigation. And they're trying to blame America for it. And where is this? Where is this story? We've forgotten it because now we're talking about impeachment. And once we finish impeachment, there's going to be the playoffs. And once we finish the playoffs, there's going to be the awards that we give out. And who's responsible for the awards? And let's not forget about Weinstein and his trial. Let's not forget about the active shooters that are going through the malls and in the theaters and shooting people. And it's okay, you know, it's going to be under control. And we send our prayers and our thoughts and we mourn these people. These are things that are now becoming part of our collective consciousness. In other words, when we talk, we've become somehow immune to the problems that they present in our lives because we fill them up with distractions. I'd like to share with you a story, which I think I may have or may not have, I'm not sure, used it in the past. I know I've used for other example in my sermons, but I don't know if I've shared this on Next Step. But today I want to use this story specifically to address this story of distractions, okay? It's called The Bridge. It's a beautiful story. I'll put a link on today's show notes because I have a feeling you're going to want a copy of this. It's called A Haunting Story of Love. And I don't know who the author is, but I do have a date on it as 2001 when I first used it or first published it. The Bridge, A Haunting Story of Love. Train whistle howling, his son crying out for help. Gus was eye to eye with the horrifying decision. Gus was the proud operator of a drawbridge over a busy river. Each day he'd yank the levers that would elevate the old railroad bridge to allow passage of ships below. One Saturday, several years ago, Gus invited his 10-year-old son, Peter, to spend the day with him at the bridge. Peter whopped with his excitement. He'd always marveled at the bridge and its levers and the big gears. His dad had the best job in the whole world, he figured. As an old fishing boat eased up the river toward the bridge, Gus showed his son how the levers performed. With a grinding hum and a few creaks, the old bridge separated and rose toward the autumn sky. Peter gasped as the boat crept upriver and out of sight. Gus began watching his gauges and jotting notes in his report book. Then came the unmistakable sound that sent Gus back to his lovers. The piercing whistle of the 10:05 southbound train. The 10:05 was a little early and a little late in blowing the warning whistle. Gus knew he must lower the bridge quickly to avoid a tragedy. Gus' big gloved hands grasped the shiny levers and pulled. He looked over his shoulder for Peter. Where was the boy? Peter! Gus' stomach nodded as his eyes nervously darted up and down the bridge. Peter! The bridge began its descent. Daddy, Daddy! Frantic with worry, Gus peered over the edge and saw his son atop the huge bridge gears. The giant teeth of the rotating machinery had consumed the boy's jacket. Now his hand and arm were being devoured, slowly pulling his entire body into the grinding gears. Gus reached for the lever, but there came the 10:05. Loaded with passengers, whistles howling, roaring toward the bridge. Daddy, help me! The terror of the boy's voice seemed to pound within every muscle of his father's body. Gus glanced at the train, then at his helpless son. And in that split second, Gus was faced with deciding between the life of his son or the hundreds of lives aboard the rushing train. Gus held firm on the lever. The bridge continued its bow of mercy for the passengers aboard the train. Gus wept as the machinery squeezed the life from his son. As the boy's shrieks melted into echoes, the 10:05 sped across the old bridge. The vacationing passengers had no idea what had just transpired below the bridge. In the air-conditioned comfort, they waved and smiled at Gus as they whizzed past. 2,000 years ago, a similar situation faced a loving father. Much more was at stake back then, but confronted with the awesome decision, the father chose to allow his son to die so that we could live. Now we are faced with some haunting questions. How will we demonstrate to God that the life of his son means more to us than waving and smiling as we go by? Are we willing to step out of our air-conditioned comfort and reflect God's love to those around us? What will it take to get our attention? It's a beautiful story, and it brings the point right home. I've used this in many ways to talk about the impact of what happened on Good Friday, to understand what it must mean for the father to give his son. But today I come to you with this same story to talk about the reaction of those people on board. those passengers are us, right? Right? We see all this beauty around us. We see this world and we see what we have. And we wave. Yeah, we nod. We smile. We laugh. And meanwhile, there's people who are dying. There's people who are sacrificing. There's people who are going through so much. The God experience, the Gus experience, is one of profound sacrifice. And yet, as long as we have our Academy Awards, as long as I have something to laugh about and the comic is making me feel good about what's going on in the world, as long as, you know, I don't have to be confronted with that child dying in Syria, you know, I'm fine. Give me my Super Bowl. And this is not about putting guilt on people. You know, I don't do that. I don't do that. What I want to do is share with you. The other day, somebody said, you know, I saw the priest over there at that church, and he's so funny. He always asks me, why don't we see you at church? You know, I don't do that. I've never done that. I've never asked. I never, 37 years, I've never asked somebody, why don't you go to church? Because it's going to force them to lie, right? It's going to force them to lie. You know that... That there's no good reason why I can't give up an hour Sunday morning, except that I don't want to. But nobody will say that. I don't want to go to something I don't understand. I don't want to go to something that, you know, okay, I've heard a couple times before. I don't want to go to something that has no relevance in my life today. These are answers that we would expect, but people are reluctant to give those answers, especially to a priest. So I never ask those questions. It's not about putting the guilt on people. It's just to get us to start thinking about what are really the true treasures, what are the true blessings that we have in our lives, and how simply and easily we can lose them if we're not tuned in to the pain and suffering of others all around us. And we have that chance to do that right now. There's so much going on in the world. And in this week where we remember Dr. Martin Luther King, let's remember the reverend part to it, that he brought to us a very special message, the message of Christ. Let's not get distracted with all of the stuff that goes around it. And just as Dr. Lawson said last week, the idea that, okay, you know, he's part of the civil rights movement. No, he was a theologian. He was somebody who studied the gospel, the message of Jesus, and he brought that message to Jesus to play in our lives today. What can we do to be inspired by him? What can we do to make the changes that are necessary in our lives, whether we want peace for the planet or peace with our brother and sister in our family? I told myself I wouldn't be distracted by this pianist, but, you know, he is good. And it also tells us that here's Susie.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vasquez.
Thank you, Susie. That was a nice announcement, and thank you all of our listeners. I've got so much going on right now. It's just, it may seem overwhelming. And in fact, sometimes did you ever see that movie called Scanners? Well, if you haven't, don't see it. But there was a moment where I could relate to. And those of you probably know what I'm talking about. But there is just an awful lot. Recently, We're putting together the Reclaim 2020. Mark it on your calendars. It's on March 14. It actually starts on the Friday before, which is Friday the 13th. But it would be neat if you got there, okay? The 13th, but the 14th is going to be the sessions. Mark it on your calendar. It's going to take place at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral in Burbank, California, at the Western Diocese headquarters. I'm in charge of putting together an incredible program like we've had for the last three sessions. This one, it is for Etchmiadzin, Reclaim Etchmiadzin. And what I'm putting together is my presentation, which happens to be about an American going to a communist country and ending up in a Christian seminary at Etchmiadzin, 1977. So what I'm doing in preparation, I'm converting. This is like old world. I have slides, converting those slides into digital format so that they could be part of my presentation. It is wild. I am reliving my life. 1977, 1978. Just, yeah, it's pretty wild. Going through a lot. It's been an emotional time. And I hope you'll be able to join us, not only for that session, but the entire Reclaim. March 13 and 14 in Burbank, California. Also, this Lenten season, I'm going to be doing a six-week session at the cathedral on Wednesday evenings. These are called Lenten Talks. They're part of the Lenten Vigil service, the Huskum service. I believe that they're going to be in Armenian language. I'm not certain, but I believe they're in the Armenian language, in which case we will have an English translation available online. And that's part of our commitment to this ministry and our commitment to getting the word out. It's part of our 2020 Lenten Journey series. Now, a lot has to take place for that to happen. Most importantly, keep me in your prayers, keep this ministry in your prayers, and know that the love of God is something incredible. And it needs to be heralded, it needs to be shared, but most importantly, it needs to be lived. And if you can live that love of God, then count on this priest to bring these messages to you. I want to thank you for your beautiful comments, for your beautiful support. They really do keep me going. So with that, let's see, Sundays I'm going to be at the Oakland St. Vartan Armenian Church. That's up in Northern California, across the bay from San Francisco. Next few weeks, I'll be there on Sunday for Divine Liturgy, hanging out, doing some fun stuff. I hope to see you there if you're in the Northern California area. Let's wind it up, okay? The music's been queued up. Listen, drop me a line. feedback@epostle.net. Epostle, easy to remember, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. Epostle.net, feedback@epostle.net. And of course, we're on all the socials. Actually, I got off one of the socials, but you'll never notice. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vosgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I want to live it.